Welcome to Manager Tools. This is Kate.
And this is Sarah.
Today's podcast, Everybody Has Too Much Work to Do, part one of two.
The questions this cast answers are, why does everyone feel so overworked? What can I do to help my team deal with their workloads? And how can I help my directs develop?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Do the managers in your organization need training? Are you seeing attrition or a need for more results? We can help. Our client ENC is delivered on-site or virtually for up to 30 managers. Teach them how to achieve results and retention while supporting your mission and getting all their real work done. Reach out to Maggie at maggie@managertools.com to schedule a training event for your managers. And now, the cast. All right. Aha. This couldn't be more true. Everybody's always saying that they have too much work to do. And they're not just saying, I have a lot to do. They're complaining. They're being negative about it. Too many tasks, too many projects, too many meetings. There's just not enough time to get everything done. And we assume that this means that nobody realizes that this is the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
There's supposed to be too much work to do.
Every time we say this, Kate, I know I say this every single time we're at one of our effective manager conferences, and I'm talking about delegation. And it's almost like this moment where people feel like I'm saying something that's like, ooh, isn't that controversial? To try and get like a rise from the audience, this concept that there is more work to do than you're capable of getting done by design. And people don't really realize that. They don't understand that that's true. And actually, this morning, I had a call with a client and told them, you and I were recording this podcast today to go out in a couple of weeks. And they're like, oh my gosh, we need that one so, so badly. Too much work to do is so the complaint, the idea, the people saying there's too much work to do is incredibly common. And it's because folks, I mean, it's easier. We want just the right amount of work to do, right? Not too much. So that we're not always constantly feeling stressed. Not too much. So that we're not always worried about putting our families first, right? But also not too little. Because we also want to prove to the organization that we're deserving of getting paid. We don't want to be seen as overpaid or at risk of getting laid off.
Mm-hmm. I also truly believe part of it is the way people feel about their time. It's not necessarily always indicative of reality, right? There are times when you have less to do and times when you have more to do. So it can't always be true that, oh my gosh, I'm so, so busy. I talk to people about this all the time that, oh my goodness, everybody talks about how busy they are. And it's just this way people describe themselves now. It isn't even something that everybody has the same standard for. Like some people, their busy is much less busy than perhaps mine. I can think right now of somebody I know who only has one meeting this week, and they have stated out loud to me this week that they feel very busy this week because they have one meeting.
It's all relative, I suppose.
It definitely is. It definitely is. Also, the busyness factor, I think most people gauge by, am I using all my minutes or are any of my minutes free? And so rarely do I find that people allow any of their minutes to be free. Like even if you have nothing to do, technically, let's say, right at this moment, you go do something. Now, a lot of it is spending time on people's phones or doing something like that that doesn't make them feel like they have a lot of downtime or relaxing time, or unfocused time. It's unassigned, right? And they do. You can look at your time. What is that called on your phone? Mine does it on Sundays. It gives you like a screen time report. That's what I think it's called, is a screen time report. It tells you how much time you spent on your phone. If you think you're too busy, I want you to go look at your screen time report and tell me how many minutes you spent on your phone last week and reassess.
Yeah, reassess.
So there's that. Okay, but to your point, right? We want, everyone's the Goldilocks of how much work. And we really just, we're wondering, why can't we all have just the right amount of work? Okay, The answer is organizations aren't built for that. They never have been. They never will be. It is too hard to manage, even in small organizations, giving everybody the exact perfect amount of work would require us to do so carefully, and it's impossible. And it is never one size fits all. It's impossible. So, okay, what do we do? You know, how does an organization balance the idea of too little work, just the right amount of work, or too much work? Besides stop complaining, there's 7 things we're going to talk about today.
Exactly. The first thing we're going to talk about is just kind of helping folks understand why the organization is set up this way, the dangers of too little work. Then we'll talk about the impossibility of exactly the right amount of work. Followed by that, we're going to talk about the value of too much work, how to handle too much work via communication, how to handle too much work using delegation, how to handle too much work with prioritization, and how to handle too much work with risk. So, starting with the dangers then of too little work. And it's very basic, let's say, the simplest way of looking at the amount of work you've got. There are 3 states of your workload: too much, the perfect amount, or too little. So, first, we're going to cover the incredible dangers of too little work.
Imagine if everyone, or really anybody, has too little work to do. Really, the first thing that happens is people begin to fear for their jobs. And how stressful is that? Being afraid, I would suggest it is more psychologically damaging to be afraid for your job every day than to be stressed that you didn't get it all done. Unless the amount you're not getting done is like more than your workload or something, right? There's a threshold there. But all employees, all people in organizations are innately aware that we have to earn our keep. You have to know that you're contributing. And we also know when we are not doing so.
Mm-hmm.
There's a gauge. There's a feeling. When we have too little work, then we know, hey, there's the risk here. There's risk of a layoff. There's risk of negative performance communications. There's risk of being seen as not important, not integral. And this scares people even more than all of that, because everybody knows, we're not probably in charge of our own workload. Most people aren't completely in charge of their own workload. So not only is there this huge risk, like mortgage level risk. Yeah,
grocery buying risk.
Yes. That risk is largely out of their control. Like, they don't feel that they can control it, which ramps up their feelings of uncertainty. And so we're really doubling down, which when people are at that level of fear, anxiety, concern, their ability to get things done is reduced and the quality of their work output goes down, because so much of their brain power is spent worrying rather than working, like just cycling on that, even when they're accomplishing a task, okay? They're thinking off and on about their risk. It's still in the back of their minds. There's this huge, horrible cave with a monster in it behind all the stuff that they're doing. And really, then, what happens is that too little work creates this horrible, vicious cycle of fear and poor performance. And then, of course, more fear, more and worse performance being like useless.
Yeah. It's a spiraling cycle of awfulness. And that sounds pretty bad. But it's not the only problem. And that's the thing. In addition, too little work slows down the work that is assigned. You may have heard this one before, folks. Idle hands are the devil's playground. People know when they have too little work to do. But again, going back to, I want to prove that I'm important here, they also feel the need to fill their workday. So, in an effort to expand the amount of things they are doing, they become less efficient at doing their current work intentionally.
You have to, almost. look, I have been in this position, not here, right? Because here we have a thing. If your work is done, you can leave your desk. Mm-hmm. And Sarah and I don't limit people saying, oh, you have to be at your desk this time of day. Now, we do ask that people let us know when they're going to step away so we don't bother them. However, that is not the situation I was in before. Before, I was in a situation where I didn't have enough to do for sometimes weeks at a time. I was making this big salary and I was young. It wasn't just a big salary. It was a big salary for somebody who's young. So for a long stretches of time, either between contracts or whatever, I didn't have enough to do and you can't leave.
Yeah. And you can't read a book at your desk.
No. And so I would actually sit there. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say this. This problem has largely gone away because now people can just sit at their computer and the whole world is their oyster. At the time, I was working in a place where computers were locked down and internet usage was not really, there wasn't a lot of stuff that you could entertain yourself with. However, that really did mean that I sat at my desk 8 hours a day. And some of those hours, six maybe some days, two maybe some days, just weren't productive.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
It's terrible. It's a horrible idea to have inefficient people working alongside people who are efficient and effective. And it's because those inefficient people are poisoning your work atmosphere. The fact that they have too little work to do is also destroying your team morale.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else can see that that person has very little work to do. They know that if they're a peer, they're most likely to be compensated somewhat similarly, yet the peer with too little work is not earning what the rest of the average high performers are with their greater workload. They're not doing the same amount of work, but again, people assume that they're getting paid the same amount of money, which further poisons our culture and our results, our performance. Even the top performers feel as though they're overworking and ought to work less because the others can. Why can't I?
Right. The top performer resents the person who's not working enough.
Yeah.
The low performer is afraid that the top performer knows, doesn't endear them to each other.
No, it does not.
At all. It also leads to time available to do other things, which are paid for by the company as a function of salary, which don't help the company.
Mm-hmm. They're getting paid for all those playing on the intranets you referred to a moment earlier.
Right. They're getting paid to do whatever they want at their desk. And the primary other work that is done is political. They're attempting to gain favor to protect their job. It's a classic principal-agent problem. The principal, the company, wants to be successful. And its agent, the employee with a low workload, is rewarded for not helping the company to do so. It's also just boring. It's so boring. I remember when I left my previous job and somebody said, why would you leave a cool job like that? And it was cool. However, there were large stretches of time with very little to do. It was so boring. So boring at times. And maybe most importantly, all of these things destroy the morale of top performers. It causes them to leave. It turns off other high performers from wanting to work for your organization. They resent it that they're doing so much and that there's somebody doing so little.
Yeah. And to your point a minute earlier, Kate, you were that person. You don't want to work there. Dude, that's boring. It is a boring place to work. So having an environment like that with some individuals who aren't having to work as hard as others, and then the ones who are working hard being twiddling their thumbs out of sheer boredom, it encourages lazy performers to want to work for your organization, which is exactly the opposite of what any effective professional manager wants.
Yeah, I actually totally believe that what happened was I was faster than everybody else. And I had too little to do because I could do more than the people around me. But there wasn't really a sense of that. And so I was getting assigned the same amount of work as everybody else with then too much time on my hands and could have been doing more, but they couldn't get everybody else to do more. So instead, they just kept me where I was at. And so it got to the point where I realized everybody was working at the same pace as me and I could have been doing at least twice as much probably.
Yeah, that's exactly it, dude. I mean, there are so many organizations who decree while allowing the poor performance of their team, the fact that there's not enough work to do. It's most well known, I would say, in governmental organizations, some maybe academic organizations. My background was working within an IT department at a university, right? Those kind of environments.
And mine was in a governmental contracting agency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where low efficiency and effectiveness is rampant. And in my case, at least, in some cases, it is defended by union representation.
Yeah.
So while these organizations acknowledge that the profit motive helps corporate organizations eliminate this issue, which it surely does, there are academic and government organizations where there is high performance as well.
Yes.
So it's not just sometimes we make money and that's what drives it solely. It helps, but there are also really high performers in those situations as well. Managers of poor performing organizations, which allow workloads to be below a reasonable level, are doing it to themselves. Profit motive or not, it's the manager's fault every single time. Management allowing for the lesser workloads and then not doing anything about it, it's the cause of much of these issues.
Yeah, even though managers complain about it. Like they complain about their people not doing enough. I will say one of the stretches when there was less to do at my previous job was like right at the beginning. And it was because I was hired right before an administration change in the federal government. And the program that I was hired to be a part of was canceled by the new administration. And there was about a month where there wasn't a lot of understanding of who was going to stay and that kind of thing. My manager at the time went around to the other groups and asked them if they could give me stuff to do. And that was great. He was like, hey, we have this person who is qualified and currently not assigned. Can you do this? And so we do understand, like, there are lulls, there's highs, there's lows, and all that stuff you're dreaming about doing could be part of the equation here. If it's not, consider that you're doing this to yourself, managers who feel like, oh, my team isn't doing enough. And there's other reasons you're doing it to them, one of which is you're not delegating enough, but we'll come back to that. Kate here with another update. June 3rd and 4th, we're heading to San Diego. 2 days, effective management and communications. If you're in California, it's an opportunity to learn the steps to becoming a more effective professional. Better management, better communication, and you can always meet with other professionals in the area. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training. It's so dangerous for people to have too little work. It's dangerous for their career. It's dangerous for the organization. It's dangerous for your ability to build a high-performing team. It's dangerous for your ability to get promoted. Dangerous. So that's too little. Let's talk about exactly the right amount of work, which is impossible.
Impossible. Basically impossible, folks. Individual workloads are not specifically planned when organizations are built. Now, if an individual were to try to optimize every single job's workload within an organization, the effort would be enormous. What's more, to your point earlier, Kate, the right amount of work is different for each and every individual employee, not just role, every single human being.
Right.
If an organization persisted in continuing to optimize workloads at the corporate level, it would take hundreds of thousands of employees to do just that, just to optimize for perfect amount of work with a massive effort, just to understand each employee's workload and what it should be. And that's hampered by low workload employees defending their workload as reasonable. So even if we tried to, in the most objective scientific way, figure out what's the perfect amount of work for some people, there would surely be some of those individuals who suggested that a lower than optimal workload was the optimal amount of work, and therefore we default again to too little work.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah. Bear in mind, y'all, some of the work, we don't even know how it needs to be done. Not even a question of like, oh, hey, we don't know what work should be done. But once we've defined all the work, everybody does it differently. I know a person who used to do 95% of their work via macros in spreadsheets. They did like these incredible, beautiful macro spreadsheets, and they were just so fast and so efficient.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do that. No. So there's all of that. Then on top of it, change is constant. Workloads change for pretty much everybody, pretty much all the time. If workloads were magically equalized, then we'd be denying our top performers their ability and desire to get more work done for their learning, their development, career growth, ethical satisfaction, and contributing to the mission. It's sort of like the famous Kurt Vonnegut story of Harrison Bergeron, which similar kind of premise here. It is true, though, that there are people who like to work and like to work hard. And genuinely, I left a job where I didn't have enough to do. I make up stuff for myself to do at the weekend. Like, I don't even know how to sit around. So, y'all, we are limiting our poor performers. And when we limit poor performers, we limit the entire organization. And finally, the mistaken ideal of figuring out just the right amount of work increases significantly that you will have some people with too little work, which is the most dangerous thing. Like you said.
Yeah.
It's just like, honestly, trying to figure it all out and make it perfect, the only way to do that is to get towards the middle, which gives some people on one end too much and some people on the other end too little.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, and I've tried multiple times to try and figure out a better, more reasonable way for our presenting team to balance their workload.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we could be really, really busy. So we could be on the road, like as a presenting team, individuals, we could be on the road 3 weeks a month. Or then it could be a slower time of the year. And now you're home for an entire month. So a job that is created to allow you to only be at your desk doing your admin work 1 week out of four now means if I design your workload for that one day's worth, let's call it, of admin work per week, and then you're at home for a month, now you have 1 week's worth of work to do in 4 weeks. It's impossible.
We're going to the pool.
Exactly. For all the organizations, all the time. Regardless of what you do, it's impossible. It's constantly changing. So our organizations do what they do. Default to the only possible option.
Yeah.
The only reasonable option, too much work.
Yeah. If we are thinking about, if you will, a workload apportionment argument, the answer is simple. Too much work is actually the correct amount of work for each person. It may not feel like the right amount. And good news, maybe bad news. Organizations don't run on feelings. That's not how it works. In fact, we've seen the danger, right, of focusing on feelings relative to work with the move to remote work during the pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. For years and years, there were actual productivity metrics for organizations and workplaces, built all around the assumption that all of the people who work here would be in the office doing their work. Mm-hmm. They were known equations, faithfully applied, and considered relative to how productive individuals and teams were. But you probably noticed that during the pandemic and afterward, in the argument about the return to the office, most remote workers talked about how they felt. They felt they were much more productive working from home. But regardless of how they felt, the fact is that this was a complete change to the metric. Remember, our metrics were based upon everyone is here, and now they are not. And when you change the metrics, it's no longer okay to compare one data set to another. Now we have to build a completely different series of metrics to measure productivity, or just ask you to come back to the office.
Yeah, especially because we weren't out of the office for long enough for the time frame to be comparable for 5 years. No.
No.
And that's where we're at, right? It's 5 years post-pandemic. It's 2025. And if you're here now, or if you're listening later, we're returning to the office. And we think this trend will continue. We think people will be invited back to the office. Look, we know it doesn't feel good, but why? Why doesn't it feel right to have too much work to do? The answer is it creates stress, which many people, employees, feel is counterproductive. But hey, it's not. It's just not true. The most productive point on the line of increasing stress from eustress to distress is actually right at or slightly below the change from good to bad stress. And the only way a manager can determine where that point on the line is to create more stress with workload than the employee can handle. That's the only way. How else would we know where the threshold from positive to negative stress is if we do not find it? Because again, different for everybody.
Exactly. Different for every single person, not just every role. Now, think about that relative to trying to engineer an exactly right amount of workload for every single person in your company. And again, it becomes literally impossible without knowing each and every individual's tolerance for the workload and the stress that comes with that workload. And that requires many hours of their work in their existing role. It's the most complex series of calculus to try and figure out, because there are too many variables when it comes to trying to figure out a perfect equation for the exact right amount of work. And it probably sounds crazy, but managers, on behalf of the organization for which you work, are by definition constantly trying to determine the upper limit of sustainable high performance from each and every person on their team. Every single employee. We're doing it all the time, trying to figure out what's the perfect amount for this person versus this person. Organizations know that the single most predictive internal measure of profitability is internal productivity. So the reasonable result of all of that is to give everyone too much work to do.
Mm-hmm. Quite simple. Now that we've explained it, hopefully, the manager's job is to find the threshold. In order to do it, the manager has to assign too much work. We know that not everything's going to get done because nobody ever gets everything done. And in addition to allotting workloads beyond what is perhaps doable, organizations also know that ideally the future leaders of the company will be making tough decisions with high stakes affecting the entire company. Deciding who should be in those roles requires identifying the people who can make those decisions and do so well.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? One of those decisions is at the company level, deciding and prioritizing what's going to get done when. It's a huge responsibility to decide what direction the company will go in and how and with what monies and when. We have to find people in the organization who can do that. And the thing is, if everyone's workload is normalized, no one has to learn to prioritize. The organization is robbed of an important component of the development of future leaders and thus the ability to decide who should be those leaders.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Our organization needs to find people who can make tough decisions. And it does that by giving every single person tough decisions to make.
Hopefully.
And seeing who does it well. And
right.
One of those tough decisions is too much work to do. It's a tough decision. It wasn't meant to be simplistic, but it helps us figure out who the best performers are. And perhaps most importantly, too much work to do incentivizes the people we most want to incentivize and encourage, our top performers. Top performers know intuitively that too much work means there will always be bigger, greater challenges for them to overcome. It's also much easier to differentiate yourself from the productivity mean when there's too much work to do. If you're at the top end of that productivity scale, and you're getting more done than the people around you, it helps you stand apart from the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incentive for top performers.
It also, too much work, I mean, de-incentivizes the people we most want to de-incentivize, which is poor performers. Poor performers won't seek to work at a company with high workload reputation, nor will they want to stay if they get in here, and then they discover, oh, I can have a similar role with a lower workload somewhere else. So having a high level of work brings in the people who will do more work and helps people who will do less work self-select out of the system.
It's kind of like the too little work to do thing, right? If your organization is known for they're not that busy around there, you'll attract those kind of individuals to your organization. But if your organization is known for all the folks over there are super busy, it encourages more people who want to be super busy and do a bunch of work to apply for your roles.
Yeah, it's an incentive economy. And it works internally too.
Yeah, as well.
Yeah, it's both. Gosh, the one that scares me is the one where there's too little work to do. It attracts people who want to do too little work. They always want to do less and less and less and less. And then slowly everything becomes zero.
Yeah.
So internally, right? High performing managers will always have a high workload department, attract high performers who know that more work gives them more chance for upward career mobility. High performers will quickly want to leave then a department with low workloads. It's kind of like a self-licking ice cream cone. We say that too much. And okay, yes, of course, it's true that there truly is a thing, that there's such a thing as too much work.
Yeah.
And these environments, Wall Street, investment banking are probably the most well-known, are decidedly rare.
Yeah, they are.
And yet, every year, they attract top talent, best and brightest.
Mm-hmm.
Partially because, hey, guess what? One of the reasons there's too much work to do is because they're insanely profitable.
Yeah, and you get a job doing something that hard, and you can get a job doing anything. When that's on your resume, it's like, oh my gosh, look how much this person did. They worked on Wall Street. Whoa, if they can do that, they can totally work here.
That's all for this week, folks. Join us again next week as we continue this topic. And if you've enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to follow, rate, and review our podcast. It helps more people find us and keeps the conversation going. Have a great day.